All about abandonment. It's an interesting Fourth Amendment topic. We're going to do abandoned property, and we're going to do also trash pulls, which is kind of very closely related. But typical disclaimers, as always. This is legal, not legal advice, but this is legal education, legal awareness. But understand your policies can be more restrictive with your agency, so make sure you're following your policy. We're going to talk about what the law is. If you have any doubts about anything you hear or see today that may not be consistent with what your agency policy is, or how you maybe think your chief or sheriff wants to do business, then by all means, please push that up the chain. Let somebody of higher rank and authority make that determination. And yes, Antoine, education awareness is very important in our profession, particularly when we're talking about legal matters like this. So again, like I said, abandoned property, just in general terms, and then we'll do a little bit on trash pulls, searching trash towards the end. All right, and we are going to be talking about just the federal standard when it comes to abandonment. Understand that so the Fourth Amendment, basically. Understand that state law can be more restrictive, and this is definitely one of those areas where some states do take a more restrictive approach, particularly when it comes to trash pulls. I know, for example, Iowa. I was doing some research today on another issue in Iowa, and I know for a fact Iowa is more restrictive than the federal standard, and there are quite a few states that are as well. So just make sure you follow your state law with this as well. But the issue of abandonment, not trash context, but just abandonment in general, doesn't really deviate a whole lot from state to state, although there could be some minor deviations. All right, abandoned property. Let's start and talk about that. So under the Fourth Amendment, if we declare a piece of property as being abandoned, then legally speaking, it is neither a search nor a seizure for an officer to take custody of that item and then search through it or rummage through it and examine its contents. So that's a quite a significant event. If a piece of property is legally considered abandoned, then it's not a search or a seizure. I don't have to have probable cause as a police officer to open it up. I don't need reasonable suspicion. I don't need any of those. I don't need consent. I don't need any of those things that we associate with the Fourth Amendment in order to access that item. So that's a pretty big deal. So what's going on here is the Supreme Court has in particular said that when someone abandons their property for Fourth Amendment purposes, they're essentially relinquishing any expectation of privacy or any Fourth Amendment interest. I'll talk about the privacy aspect in a little bit, but they're abandoning any Fourth Amendment interest that they may once have had in that particular item. It doesn't matter if it's a car, a house, a backpack, a purse, your trash, anything, any piece of personal property, in theory, could be abandoned. The Supreme Court historically, a long time ago, talked about abandonment, but in very general terms. I think the first Supreme Court case where abandonment was ever even mentioned as a basis for collecting evidence was Hester versus the United States, which Hester's most notably known for its establishment of what we would call today the open fields doctrine. But it involved a pursuit, a foot pursuit by a police officer of Hester and I think his father as they ran through the woods at an illegal, like a distillery they had going on at their house. And Hester is running with a little jug of whiskey, and he tosses it aside while the officer is chasing him, and later on the officer catches up and examines it, and turns out it is in fact illegal alcohol. And the Supreme Court says it was not there was no Fourth Amendment violation. The officer did not need a warrant, did not need consent to examine the jug, because Hester, by his own act, he chose to toss the jug aside and continue on, thereby abandoning the container. So therefore, it was not a Fourth Amendment issue. Now, so the court just mentions abandonment. They don't really do any analysis, so we don't really learn like what makes something abandoned. So Hester, not particularly helpful case, but it's where we at least get our footprint, our foothold, I should say, when it comes to the law of abandonment. Another case, similar in the fact that the court just in passing, they just mentioned abandonment as a basis for a search, and that's Abel versus the United States, where Abel, he was staying in a hotel room and he checks out and he leaves, packs up and leaves. But before he leaves, the FBI agent gets permission from the hotel to go into Abel's room before they've cleaned it, and he rummages through his trash can and he finds incriminating documents that Abel left in the trash can. And the Supreme Court says once again, he's abandoned this trash that was in the basket, the trash can. So therefore, there was no Fourth Amendment violation. It wasn't a search or a seizure. So that's kind of, but again, no analysis of like what's the rule, like how do we know, like when someone's abandoned it. So it's just mentioned. Okay. Now, but we have had some significant developments since then. Now, abandonment also brings into play the law of property. All right, property law. And anybody who's ever done any reading on the law of property or studying the law of property knows that the law of property is a very can be a very arcane topic. So like the rules can be very arcane. Nobody knows like the reason why we have some of the rules that we have. They're very kind of peculiar, particularly talking about real property, land. So there's a lot that goes into the law of property, and it does have a role to play in figuring out whether a piece of property is actually abandoned in the Fourth Amendment sense of the word. But don't worry, you don't have to know a lot about the ins and outs of the law of property, because it is part of the analysis, but it's not always particularly a particularly significant part of the analysis. But let's talk about a couple of property law terms and give their definition. So obviously, let's what does it mean in the law of property? Okay, not Fourth Amendment, but on the law of property. What does it mean to abandon property? And the definition of abandoned property is, as you can see, it's property that the owner has voluntarily surrendered, relinquished, or disclaimed any possessory or title ownership interest in that property. Okay, so he no longer has a recognized legal interest in that property. Now, compare that though with lost property. Okay, that also has a definition in the law of property. That's property that the owner, he no longer possesses it, but it's because of some kind of accident, negligence, carelessness on his part or somebody else's part, that even though he may look for it, or maybe someone who would be looking for it would not be able to locate it through the ordinary search process. So lost property is not the same thing as abandoned property. And then there's mislaid property, our last definition. That this is property that's not lost, it's not abandoned, but it's proper the property the ownership owner has he's temporarily relinquished possession of it, but he's shown an intent to recover it, but then he can't find it. Okay, now he can't find it. This is definitely civil law. This whole notion of property, it's used in a civil context. So mislaid property. What an article is mislaid if you intentionally put it somewhere for a temporary purpose, and then inadvertently you leave it there when you, the owner, go away. And here an example is, this comes from Black's Law Dictionary. If you go to the bank, okay, and you take you're writing a check, okay, and you bring a little package in with you, and you just set it on the counter while you're writing a check or filling out some paperwork, and then you accidentally leave your package sitting on the counter when you leave the bank. Okay, you have that's mislaid. That pack property is, I'm sorry, that package is mislaid properly. Property. There's usually a way to figure out who it belongs to. The vehicle broke down on the side of the road. It wouldn't be mislaid property, but it's not potentially abandoned property either. It's unattended property, Casey, to add a whole nother little wrinkle to it. Yeah, just because I my vehicle breaks down on the side of the road doesn't mean I've abandoned it necessarily. All right, so those are the distinctions. Now, so this abandonment issue we're talking about today obviously is only going to apply if the property is actually abandoned. Mislaid property, lost property, Baggage left at the airport, it could be lost or it could be mislaid. If like if you just accidentally leave it there, you probably know where it is. We have a means of finding you. It's probably categorized as mislaid property. You didn't abandon it, most likely. So, but this whole notion of abandonment, as not implicating the Fourth Amendment, it only applies to truly abandoned property. It doesn't apply to mislaid or lost property. So, and it's abandonment, whether we're talking about abandonment in the property law sense or abandonment in the Fourth Amendment sense, we're talking about their intent. There has to be the intent on the part of the owner of that property or the possessor of that property to abandon it. So intent is going to be key in these cases. Now, there's a critical point that the Supreme Court has said and lower courts have said for years. There's the law of property, okay, that the old arcane rules of property, okay. Then there's abandonment in that sense, but there's also abandonment in the Fourth Amendment sense. They're not the same thing. They're not necessarily the same thing. They have their own different rules. A piece of property can be abandoned in the property law sense of the word, but not abandoned. I'm sorry, abandoned in the Fourth Amendment sense of the word, but not abandoned in the property law sense of the word, like I just said. So I could have a piece of property that I still have an ownership interest in. On the law of property, it's not abandoned. But under the Fourth Amendment, it certainly could be abandoned such that if the police officer rummages through it, it's not a Fourth Amendment violation. So that's what we want to focus on today. What does it mean to be abandoned in the Fourth Amendment sense of the word? That doesn't mean property law has no place in the analysis, but it's not usually the end all be all. So here's an example. All right, if you're on a you make a traffic stop, and the driver of the vehicle, the sole occupant of that vehicle, pulls over on a busy highway and just takes off running, leaves the door open, car running, takes off running. All right, has that person abandoned that car, do you think, under the Fourth Amendment sense of the word? And I haven't really defined what it is yet, but let's just kind of like think about this as, he definitely has an abandonment on the law. He has not abandoned under the law of property. So my second question, he still owns that car. That's still his car. But he has almost certainly abandoned it in the Fourth Amendment sense of the word. Okay, so here's an example of where it's probably abandoned under the Fourth Amendment, meaning it's not a search or a seizure for the police officer to rummage through it. But it's definitely not abandoned in the property law sense of the word. He hasn't disclaimed his ownership of that vehicle. He still owns it. So it's still his. He gets his property back, but he has he wants nothing to do with it at that point, and he has made it known by fleeing it from. That's right, Casey, and that's going to be the key here. And before we get into the rule, how about this? Hotel guest checks out of the hotel, but leaves a bunch of clothes in a closet. Has that clothing been abandoned in the Fourth Amendment sense of the word? Absolutely. I'm sorry, the property law. No, he hasn't abandoned his clothing. He hasn't displayed them. I'm sure that would probably be mislaid property. Okay, he forgot it was there and then he left, but he knows where it is or where it should be. Okay, is it abandoned in the Fourth Amendment sense of the word? The answer here is probably also no as well. There's no intent to abandon in this particular situation. And now let's get into what it actually takes to be abandoned in the Fourth Amendment sense of the word. Let's look at a case here. United States versus Sparks, an interesting case from the Fifth Circuit. I'm sorry, the 11th Circuit down in Florida. So we ha here's what happens. This woman, Miss Sparks, she has left her cell phone at a Walmart store. She's lost her phone. Okay, she doesn't know where in Walmart. She just knows she went into the phone to the Walmart with it, and she left, and it wasn't there. Okay, so she doesn't remember where she put it. So it's not mislaid property in that she put it down intentionally and walked away for a moment. She just dropped it somewhere. So she sends a text message to the phone and asking whoever has found the phone, who reads the message, to please call this particular number back, and so she can reclaim her phone. Okay. Well, a Walmart employee finds the phone and sees the message and calls the number. Sparks answers, and she asks the employee who says they have the phone, don't take it to customer service and leave it there. Just I want you to hold on to it, and I'm going to come meet you at Walmart and pick it up. And the meeting was set, I think, for the next day. Okay, so that's kind of peculiar. After the employee has made these arrangements, the employee decides to look at the phone to see if there's any photos. So the employee can figure out who to give this, like who's coming to get this phone. Okay, so just to try and make sure that I'm giving the phone to the owner. Well, what does she discover? Well, it's not password protected. And what does she discover? She finds pictures of child pornography on the phone. So she takes the phone, the employee takes the phone to the police department, who ends up getting search warrants to search the phone after they'd have examined some of the phone, some of the pictures. So there's some private search doctrine going on here as well. But the issue here that we want to talk about is, did Sparks abandon her lost cell phone in this case? Was it abandoned by the time the officer looked at the photos? You know, this would be a potential, this is a cat out of the bag issue. But as far as the abandonment issue, of course, the government's going to say, yes, she abandoned the phone, so there's really no Fourth Amendment issue. But Sparks says, no, it's just lost. It's not abandoned. Well, let's look at some of the factors the court said. Here's some factors the court said showed that this phone was abandoned. Now, I didn't give you all these facts. I mean, this isn't quite a fair question. I didn't give you all the facts when I was summarizing the case. But so to be fair to you guys, because a lot of you guys are saying, no, this is actually going to turn out probably to be abandoned. She tells, first of all, she does, I told you this one. She tells the employee to leave it. Don't leave it at customer service. Hold on to the phone. So she's saying, she's suggesting she wants her phone back, but not at any cost. Okay. So that's kind of a weird, suggestion. So when the employee doesn't show up to the meeting, because she's already given the phone to the police, Sparks knows how to get her phone back. She knows who has it. She knows where she works, but she never went back to the Walmart to try and look for this employee. She didn't go to Walmart and ask for their help and saying, hey, your employee has my phone. Okay. She never files a report with Walmart or the police saying that this employee has her phone but won't give it back. Instead, she made a conscious decision, the court said, to stop looking for the phone, even though she knew how to get it back with a little bit of reasonable effort. And then also, oh, she never sent another text message to saying, hey, if you find my phone, call this number. And finally, and also she, several days later, she files an insurance claim and gets a replacement phone, the same model as the lost phone. So now that you have all those facts, what do you think? That was this just the law? It was definitely lost in the beginning. Definitely abandoned. Yeah. Arnie, the answer of the court says the only reasonable conclusion one could draw is that she had no intention to do anything further to recover the phone. Therefore, she's abandoned it. Yeah. So it started out as a lost phone. So, it did have Fourth Amendment protection, but now it's abandoned. Okay, because of her actions. So it's usually the person's actions that we're going to focus on, and sometimes their words too, but we want to focus on their actions in particular. What have they done either before the phone was allegedly abandoned? Yeah, not a Fourth Amendment violation, not a violation of the Fourth Amendment, because it's once the phone has been deemed abandoned, whatever point that was, anything that the police do after that point with that phone is not a search of the phone. Okay. So we don't, none of the Fourth Amendment rules apply. I don't need crew. I don't need PC. I don't need RS. Once we deem it abandoned. Okay. Now it wasn't abandoned initially. And no, private actors cannot violate the Fourth Amendment unless they're acting as an agent of the government. All right, so the test is going to be, how do we know if something is abandoned? It's the question is, has the person relinquished all reasonable expectation of privacy in that item? Has the person relinquished all reasonable expectation of privacy in that item? All right, let's look at a video here.
What are you for?
So what do you think? What was the wallet that he left on the counter? Was that abandoned property? Yeah, he wasn't, yeah, not the brightest fellows in the world. Yeah, that's mislaid property. There's no question that's mislaid property. He doesn't have, there's no intent to relinquish any expectation of privacy. So the abandonment document doesn't come into play here. Let's say you did, just set this video aside just for a second. Let's say you did, someone turned over to you, like a store employee says, "Hey, officer, here's a wallet I just found in aisle number 7. Okay, whether it's lost or mislaid, doesn't matter at this point. What purpose could an officer, do you think, search that wallet? Like open that wallet, look in the contents of it. Yeah, look for an ID to find an owner. Absolutely. Under the community caretaking authority, we certainly could open that wallet in this case to look for an owner. And, but once we found that, well, that's probably it as far as the searching goes. We get a driver's license. So going back to this video, it's clearly mislaid. Would we be able to argue that we're searching the property, this mislaid wallet, with the intent to ID the person to give him his wallet back? No. But I don't think you could go with we're searching this guy's wallet without a warrant to identify him to return it to him. Okay, we're looking for it to maybe find out who he is to arrest him. So what other justifications? And so it's not abandonment. What other justification could we use? Because I think you can. I think you first officer on scene, the clerk says that's his wallet. He left it right there. What would be the reason we're looking for it? It's obviously to ID the guy, right? But it's not so we can return it to him. It's to identify the offender. And now remember, all searches require consent, warrant, or recognize exception. We have no warrant, we have no consent. What would be our record exigency? Ryan, very good. My friend from James City. I love the answer. It is exigency. The need to identify this guy right now. He just committed an armed robbery. Hey, he's on the loose. We got to find this guy. Public safety. So yes, we can search the wallet in that situation, but it's not for the under the abandonment theory. It is under the exigent circumstances. And PC, probable cause to believe that that's his wallet, and his ID would be in there, and then the exigency would forgive the warrant requirement. So good. All right. So can disclaiming ownership or possession of the item, can that constitute abandonment? Because remember, it has to be an intentional act. And yes, it can. The answer is this, the simple answer is yes. Disclaiming ownership in the property certainly can constitute an abandonment, but it's not quite that simple. Yeah, these are not my pants, the ones that I'm wearing, right? I actually did have someone in my career, about halfway through my career, actually told me that. I thought it was just some made up thing you see on TV. No, he actually told me that, and they were his pants. But disclaiming ownership is different. Saying that's not mine or those aren't my pants, that's different than just not saying anything. So if we find a little, like a bag, and there's, and we say, we're searching a car, and we pick up a bag, and say, "Whose bag is this? Or is this your bag?" And the occupants, they just sit there quietly. They don't answer. That's not disclaiming the property. Okay, so that doesn't mean they've abandoned it. Okay, so just sitting there quietly when we're asking someone potentially to incriminate themselves by saying, "Yeah, that's my bag," that's not intentionally relinquishing privacy in that bag. So be careful with that. Now, yep, and he doesn't have a right to remain silent. So not answering is not disclaiming ownership. Also, simply denying ownership is just because you say this isn't mine. So we ask, one thing we'll talk about a little bit is when we find a piece of property land, we say, "Whose is this?" We don't want to just ask, "Is this yours?" Okay, because that's just saying, and someone says, "No, it's not mine," they're just saying they don't own it. But maybe I'm just holding on to my friend's backpack for the day, right? He let me borrow his backpack. I don't own it, but I'm possessing it, so I'm liable for what's in it. But if an officer asks me, "Is this yours?" and I say, "No, it's not mine," I'm just disclaiming ownership of that backpack. I'm not disclaiming necessarily possession of that backpack, which for it to be abandoned, I have to disclaim ownership and possession. Okay, so just saying I don't, it's not mine is not gonna render it disclaimed, no more ownership, or no more Fourth Amendment interest It's abandoned. Okay, it's a little bit more nuanced than that. And this case here, this Colbert case, is this is a dissenting opinion from the one of the judges here. And this is where a guy, it's actually two guys, they were seen holding these two pieces of luggage by an officer. And then as the officer approaches, they put the luggage down, they just set it on the sidewalk, and they start to walk away. And eventually the officer asks, you know, are those your pieces of luggage? And they said, no, those aren't ours. We have nothing to do with them. When that obviously is not true. Okay. We just saw these guys carrying the bag. And now, so the course thing, this obviously false disclaimer of ownership is not abandoning the property. They're saying it's not theirs because they know there's something inside that they're going to get in trouble for. So rather than incriminate themselves by saying that's our luggage, they lie about their ownership interest, their possession interest. So this, although it was deemed to be abandoned in this particular case, there are other cases that would cite this case and say, yeah, that's not abandonment when it's obvious that that is his bag. Okay, so just somebody saying it's not mine is not going to do the trick. So yes, a disclaimer can constitute abandonment. But it has to be an intentional act and a complete relinquishment of expectation of privacy. So just my point is just saying that's not mine, particularly when there's facts that suggest it actually is his, is not going to be the intentional abandonment we're looking for. Again, so in order for a disclaimer, though, that isn't mine, okay, to constitute abandonment, it's good to have at least one additional factor that we can point to show that corroborates the disclaimer. Like he conceals an item in a public area. He's like a guy sees an officer approaching him, and he takes an item out of his pocket and he puts it under like a park bench and he walks away from it, okay? And then we recover the item and we say, is this yours? And he says, no, that's not mine. Okay. That's a disclaimer. And I think it's also an abandonment in the fact that he left it there and then he walked away. And of course, and he's also saying it's not his. So, there's that. Now, a person can reclaim just as e that should say person can reclaim as easily as he can disclaim. So typo there. A person can reclaim their possessory or ownership interest is just as easily as they can disclaim it. You know, so if we're searching that bag or that is in fact abandoned, okay, and then we're and but halfway through the search, the guy we've got under arrest says, no, you got me, I lied, that is my bag. He's reclaimed ownership of it, and it's no longer abandoned. So unless we've already found something in there, then we have to stop our examination of the bag. We might have another reason. Again, it could be an inventory search. We could ask him for consent. Maybe we have some kind of exigency, but we've lost the abandonment argument because he's reclaimed it. So he's just as much right to reclaim. It's no longer abandoned once that happens. So what are examples of acts of abandonment? We talk about all the stuff that's not really abandonment. What are examples of things that are clearly abandoned? Well, here's one that I think you don't have to think too hard about. I think you get the point there. I'd say that's clearly abandoned. Okay, all those bales of, I'm assuming, marijuana, that's clearly going to be abandoned. And that one's easy. Okay, you know. So what are some other things that would constitute abandonment? Discarding an item in a public place. Okay, you know, the theory is that when I intentionally leave something behind with no intent apparently to return anytime soon. I've lost all expectation of privacy in that item. Anybody walking by could open that item and examine its contents, and a police officer can do the same thing. You know, throwing something out of a window of a building could clearly constitute abandoning property, particularly if you throw it into a publicly accessible area or throwing something out of the window of a moving vehicle. I mean, those are obvious ones. Attempting to conceal an item in a public place. There was a case that I read recently. It's an older case, but officers were approaching this suspect on the street, and he sees the officers, and he turns around, he walks into a store. I think it was like a consignment store. He walks inside, and the officers notice. They watched him as he go inside. He reached under the counter, and he put something under the counter as if to hide it. Well, the officers went right to that counter and pulled that item out, and it turns out it was some kind of evidence or contraband. And the court said that was abandoned because it's a store open to the public. He intentionally leaves it in a place where anybody walking into that store could have opened that item up and examined its contents. So there was no expectation of privacy in that situation. Putting an item in a trash can and then leaving the area, like a trash can on a sidewalk, you drop something in there and you walk off because there's a police officer approaching you. That would likely be deemed abandoned because anybody walking by could look in there. We talked about this one, fleeing from a vehicle. That is left in a public area in a manner not consistent with the intent to return to the vehicle. Okay, so it's not parked in a parking spot, or it is in a parking spot, but they left the door wide open, or the engine running, and he runs off into the woods. Okay, those are things that people that's clearly not an intent to return anytime soon to that vehicle. Does it only apply to containers? No, it can apply to anything. You can abandon a house, you can abandon a car. You can abandon pretty much anything. You can abandon DNA evidence. There's cases out there when people they take a sip out of a Chick-fil-A iced tea and they throw the cup away, and a police officer comes and takes the straw from the cup out of the trash can and sends it off for a DNA analysis. There's cases on that, and courts typically consider that abandoned. So anything that you at one point had a possessory interest in, and then you leave it behind intentionally with no intent, apparent intent to return, can be, spit on the ground. Absolutely. There's cases on about DNA cases from spit on the ground too. Leaving an inoperable vehicle in a public location for an extended period of time. There was a case in a previous version of this presentation I was looking at where a guy, I guess his car breaks down and he pushes it into a motel parking lot, and then he leaves it and he doesn't return for numerous days on end. Never contacts the business, say, "Hey, my car's broken down." He just never returned to it, and the court said that was abandoned that because of the manner in which he left. It probably wasn't abandoned right away. But yeah, with disabled vehicles, we typically want to give them a period of time to come back and fix it, or have it towed away. But after a certain period of time, it becomes apparent that there's no reasonable expectation of privacy in this thing because you've left it here for an extended period of time. So it can be any item. Well, what about cell phones? Can you abandon a cell phone? We were talking about in the Sparks case earlier, that was an abandoned cell phone. And there is case law that kind of cuts both ways on this one. I want to talk about this South Carolina case. I just use this as an example where this is the courts. The majority says yes, this phone was abandoned. Now it was a phone that was left behind at a burglary. It was clearly mislaid or lost at the scene of a burglary. Okay, so initially it was not abandoned. Okay, and the police recover it. All right. He's not intentionally relinquishing expectation of privacy. He didn't intend to leave it there. But after a period of time has passed, and this was several days, the court said then it became abandoned because the person made no effort to try and reclaim it. He didn't, call the police for obvious reasons, okay, because he didn't implicate himself in a burglary. But he makes no effort to reclaim it. So at some point, the court says it did become abandoned. And therefore, once it reaches that point, it doesn't specifically say how many days does it have to be in the police custody. I think this was, I want to say it was 6 days. But at that point, the court said it was abandoned. So did the police need a warrant to search the digital contents of the phone? No, because it wasn't a search in the constitutional sense of the word. 6 days. No efforts to recover it. Therefore, his attempt to not rec his, I'm sorry, no attempt to recover it demonstrated his abandonment of the phone. So no, it's not a search to examine the digital contents. And then, of course, they found evidence of the burglar on the phone. But the dissenting opinion, I want to point it out. I don't always point out dissenting opinions because they're not binding, but sometimes a well-written dissent can other courts might adopt this as a majority position. Other courts have taken this position. Talking about Riley versus California, this is the cell phone search incident to arrest case that says you cannot search a cell phone as an incident to the arrest. And the court is saying basically here that we think the Supreme Court in Riley created a categorical rule that says you cannot search a phone unless you have a warrant or exigent circumstances, and neither of those were here. I don't think that's right. I don't think Riley says that's the only reason you can search the phone is with a warrant or exigency. They just said it can't be search incident to arrest, but they did talk a lot about the privacy aspect of a phone and the types of information on there. That's certainly not, I don't want to discount that. And then they're basically, here's the problem I think with this dissent, as they said, the abandonment is an exception to the Fourth Amendment. It really isn't. It doesn't apply to the Fourth Amendment. It just means the Fourth Amendment doesn't apply. Exigent circumstances is an exception to the Fourth Amendment warrant requirement. Search incident addresses is an exception, but abandonment is not. But there are a lot of courts, though, my point is, that do take the position that no matter how long this cell phone has been out of the person's custody, it can never be abandoned, at least as far as the digital contents go. I think it's a good idea. If you're going to search a phone, you probably should have a warrant, okay? Probable cause plus a warrant. Now, in the burglary, in this case, the burglary case, they had PC. It's found at the scene of a burglary, and it doesn't belong to the homeowner. There's your probable cause right there. But so with cell phones, the case law is it cuts both ways when it comes to abandonment. Some courts say you can abandon a cell phone. Others say under no circumstances you can. All right, trash pulls real quickly. The leading case on this, California versus Greenwood. A gun gets left in a rental car hotel. Do I have a right to do a nib and check to see if the gun was? Yes, absolutely, because there's no privacy interest in checking that serial number or doing the ballistics testing in that regard. I don't think it infringes upon a privacy interest. Trash collection, California versus Greenwood. And there's a quote here, and I'm going to bring this up again when I talk about another dissenting opinion, but this is a very common quote that people cite with Greenwood. But why a person has no reasonable expectation of privacy in the trash can they leave out for collection on the sidewalk is because the Supreme Court says anybody, animals, children, scavengers, snoops, other members of the public can go by and rummage through the trash can. Therefore, you do not have a reasonable expectation of privacy in trash that is left for collection in an area accessible to the public. Okay, so that's the key. The key here is going to be, is this trash can or the trash bag, whatever it is it on the curtilage, okay, of the house, or is it somewhere else? Curtilage is the key here. Curtilage is going to be the key. If it's on curtilage, you're probably not going to be able to justify this as an abandonment issue. Now, I do want to point out one other dissenting opinion that I think is this one in Carpenter. Carpenter is the CSLI case, cell site location case. It's a 5-4 to Supreme Court decision. The four justices who dissented in this case all wrote a dissenting opinion. That is not normal. Okay. They all had their own reasons why they didn't like Carpenter, but most, they all are attacking cats. Cats versus the United States, which is our cell phone, I'm sorry, it's our phone booth case. That's where this whole notion of reasonable expectation of privacy comes from. And cats it's not very well liked by the current Supreme Court. And Justice Gorsuch here is referring to Greenwood. He says this whole cats reasonable expectation of privacy test, it leads to this unpredictable and sometimes unbelievable jurisprudence. He says, habits of raccoons do not prove much about habits of the country. Just because a raccoon might get into your trash can doesn't mean that it's not protected by the Fourth Amendment. My point is, if we get if we get another trash case or something like an abandonment case for this Supreme Court, I could see the law changing significantly, where it might be a search. Okay, so just kind of, keep that under your hat for right now. It's not really it's not going to happen next year, okay? But it is still a lingering issue. But curtilage right now today, curtilage is the key. Where is the trash item? Okay, do I have to go onto the curtilage to get to it? If I do, not going to be able to do it under the abandonment of theory. Just because the trash itself might be abandoned if it's sitting up next to somebody's house on their front porch, that doesn't give me a right to go onto their curtilage to get to that that abandoned bag. Okay, now yes, curtilage it can be invaded. You know, the courts talk about in Kentucky or the invadable nature of the court, but just the but you go on to the curtilage not to access the property. You go into the curtilage to access the homeowner, like the knock and talk exception, right? We're going on there to talk to interact with a homeowner. We're not going on to the curtilage to interact with the property. Okay, that's and Owsley, however you say this, is a trash pull case. It applies to trash pulls as well. They're saying you can't enter curtilage to go access abandoned property on the curtilage. Okay, you got to wait till it's taken out and put on the street for pickup. Then there's that complete loss of expectation of privacy. Now this one, the officer also waited till it was dark to go on to the curtilage. He's snooping around. Okay, so there's all kinds of issues in this case. So he was not lawfully on the curtilage. But what if you are lawfully on the curtilage? Okay, I'm there for a knock and talk. And on my way out or to the front door, I gotta pass by this trash bin. It's like it's within arm's reach of my walk to the front door. Can I then rummage through that trash can under the abandonment theory? Well, Hardiness, no, just the answer is no. Okay, but you say, well, wait a minute, you have no expectation of privacy in the trash itself. Yes, but you're on the curtilage for a limited purpose, okay, which is to engage the homeowner. So Hardiness is this is the dog on a front porch case where you can't bring our drug dog with us under the curtilage because that's going beyond this implied license or consent, if you want to think of it like that. Okay, the license, the permission to be on the curtilage is for you to go engage with a homeowner, not to come on there and investigate criminal activity with your specialized tool, in this case, the dog. And of course, this is where we call it the Girl Scout rule, as far as like, where can I go on the curtilage? The Supreme Court says if the Girl Scouts can figure it out, we think our police officers can figure it out as well. Yeah, no hidden agendas, right, Arnie? So we can do the same, but not more than any person entering the property could do for that purpose. Oops. So yeah, the dog is a search. So what do you think? Is rummaging through a person's trash within that implied consent to be on their property? And the answer is clearly is no. Jackson says if you can't bring the dog on there because that violates the license, then of course going on there with your intent to rummage through their trash cans the same thing. Like if a homeowner if the neighbor came to knock on their front door and on the way out they were rummaging through the trash can, that would cause concern, right? You'd probably call the police, okay, or at least go out there and yell at your neighbor. Okay, so no, if it's on curtilage, no access to it. Not without a warrant or consent. Okay, so under Greedwood, the expectation of privacy is completely lost when they put it out for collection. Can now in Greenwood, the garbage collector, he was acting at the direction of the police. And the police said, hey, can you go pick up the garbage here on a normal route, normal day, pick up the garbage, but keep it separate from all the rest of the trash and bring it back to us. And then just give it to us. Give us the trash bag. And that's what they did. The trash collector, and he doesn't go on the curtilage to get it. It's sitting on the sidewalk. He collects the bag. He keeps it separate from everything else. And he finishes his little route, and then he gives the bag to the police. The police rummage through it. There's evidence of drug activity. Supreme Court says that's fine. No, expectation of privacy. They don't say the word abandoned property, but that's what they're referring to, I think, in Greenwood. But what can a police officer actually rummage through the trash can? So let's say the trash can sit on the it's on the sidewalk for collection, you know, that public easement area, and the officer wants to go, you know, late at night, and rummage through the trash can or take the bag out of the trash can and search it, not without using the trash collector to do that. Can the officer search? Well, yeah, if the garbage collector can do the same thing, it's there to be picked up. And in this case, this Bowman case, that's exactly what happened. The officer went through four bags on his own, didn't utilize the garbage collector, and the court says that's good to go. Last point I want to make. So wouldn't the collector be acting as an agent? Not as long as he's doing like exactly what he would normally do. It can be a problem if we have him deviate from his schedule, because now in some communities, the trash collector will actually go up your driveway, walk up your driveway, take your trash bin and empty it for you and put it back. We can still do trash pulls on that stuff if we have the trash collector like separate that from the rest of the trash like they did in Greenwood. But what we can't do is have him like there was a case where it was they directed the trash truck collector to go with an empty truck, just collect this guy's trash off of his cartilage, and then bring the truck back to us, give us his trash, and then go back and finish your route, and do it on a day you normally wouldn't do it. Okay, so that guy was acting as our agent because that was going beyond his normal routine. But if he's just doing his regular route at his regular time, doing what he normally does, yes, he's assisting us, but he's not acting as an agent in that case. What about the whole, this is just like a little side point I want to mention. This is my last point. The whole Jones Hardiness physical intrusion definition of a search, because this whole thing about Greenwood and trash pulls is based on reduced expectation of privacy in the trash. What about the trash can itself? Like if I own, I mean, I own my trash can, or maybe even if the government owns it, I'm still, I'm leasing the use of it. I have an interest in it. And you're intruding upon that bin when you open it up, okay? Isn't that a search? It's a rhetorical question. I'll have an answer for you. There's a lot of unresolved issues with this whole reemergence of with Jones and Hardiness. A lot of stuff that just doesn't have a good answer yet. But there doesn't seem to be any case law on this. It's just something that came to my head into my head recently. It's not a meritless argument. Yeah, I think the one Aaron that you just that Iowa case, I think that was the one I was just reading today. No, trash pulls in Iowa are searches under the state constitution. But there's a lot of Fourth Amendment doctrine that we use today came out after Katz, 1968, 67, and before Jones, 2012. There's a lot of Fourth Amendment doctrine that happened in the 60s, 70s, and 80s and 90s that now we have Jones, we have another way of looking at it. And some of these things, Greenwood in particular, rest on some kind of shaky ground. Okay. Now I'm not saying that it's gonna be deemed a search anytime soon, but we have the right confluence of factors. We have a Supreme Court where several members have clearly said Katz is garbage. Okay, no pun intended. And if they get a Katz case, it's gone. Okay. And we it's gonna take the right case, and a trash pull case could be the case. But whether you can do it without a so whether it's a search to go through trash is right now it's not, okay? But whether it becomes a search, it's just the first issue. Whether you can do it without a warrant is a whole nother matter entirely. So we'll have to see. Stay tuned on that one, to see what happens. All right, we've been at it for almost an hour. If you like what you saw, if you want to see more of us, hear more of what we have to say about search and seizure, because we do have a lot to say, then reach out to Aaron, our training guru at training at trainingatbluegall.com. Schedule us to come out there. It doesn't have to be me, it can be John, Anthony, Chris, Mike, any one of our great instructors. We'd love to come out. All right, here's my email and phone number if you want to reach out to me. We have to give our gun away. Actually, before we do that, I'm going to do two things. I'm going to stop the recording, and then I'm going to, let's see, stop recording.